You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Orioles broadcaster Jim Hunter, who's joining us this week. And Jim, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your day and joining us here on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always a lot of fun, Tim.
All right, and this is a fun time to do the podcast because we're just out of the All-Star break, obviously. Less than 2 weeks to go until that trade deadline, and things are heating up in the American League East for sure because the Orioles haven't exactly come out of the break like gangbusters. The bats have gone a little bit quiet, Jim. Some of that is because some of those big bats haven't been in the lineup. Obviously, Chris Davis missing some time. Wieters has been out, but this is the fear for the Orioles, right? With the pitching that they have and the issues that they have on that pitching staff, they can't afford to not be swinging the bats well.
Well, that's a very point, although if you look at how the games have gone since the All-Star break, the pitching actually has pitched pretty well. I mean, the other night in Tampa, they won a 2-1 game. Here on Monday night in New York, they lost a 2-1 game. So the pitching certainly has kept them in. But it's just one of those unusual things that nobody can explain. And as Buck Showalter likes to say, it's basically the ebb and flow of the season. How an entire lineup basically can go cold at the same time, especially one as powerful as this, you wouldn't think it's possible. But that's how it's happened out of the break. The team in the first five games out of the break, they've scored 10 runs, and they've scored only one run in each of the last two games. But I don't think there's anyone that's too overly concerned. It's frustrating when you're going through it. Last night they had a chance to get back in the game when it was 3-1. They had second and third and one out, then bases loaded, one out, and couldn't get a big hit to tie the game. So I'm sure they're going to break out of it, and they know that they have the talent. But what you mentioned from the start will be the deciding factor as the race goes forward, and that's how well the starting pitching comes around.
Yeah, and then we'll see what they do to help out that starting pitching over the next couple of weeks. So as we record this on Wednesday, the lead in the East down to just a half a game, and you get the feeling that this race is going to be a good one from now all the way through September with the Orioles, the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays. It's three good baseball teams, I think, but three teams that all kind of have their flaws. And Jim, I can't see a scenario where either of any of those three teams run away with this division.
Yeah, that's probably unlikely, in particular because of how many games each team still has left within the division. And when you have series like this where it's a four-gamer, the Yankees are trying to gain ground and they have the last 2 days. But if the Orioles win the next two and split the series, the Yankees are exactly where they were when the Orioles came to town with four fewer games to play. The Red Sox, they're getting hot. They played well right up to the break, and they played well since the break. And the Blue Jays, I think, are coming around. They seem to have found their offense, and as we saw from last year, that is a very potent offense. And I think they probably have the rotation that has the fewest question marks of the teams, although the Red Sox did help their team with Drew Pomeranz, who makes his debut for the Red Sox today. So it's going to be, you know, who does what less than 2 weeks now until the trade deadline, and then how do you put it together between August and September? I do remember that in 2014, the Orioles starting pitching really came together after the All-Star break, and from late July on, they were as good or better than any staff in the league. So they have to hope that that happens. They have to hope that they can avoid what they're going through now, where it's a top-to-bottom team slump, and I think they're going to be fine because the one thing about the Orioles team, they're a very resilient team. They don't let things bother them like bother fans where, you know, they scored one run in back-to-back games and the Orioles fans are on the ledge, you know, downtown Baltimore. The Orioles are of the mindset, okay, it's Wednesday. We're going to show up. We're going to try to win today. And if they win, they have a chance to split tomorrow with their best pitcher on the mound. So the resiliency of this team has been a real high-quality trait since they turned the corner and got into the playoffs in 2012.
And, Jim, I mentioned the guys that have been out through this little slump, Davis and Wieters, and now Hyun-Soo Kim also heading to the disabled list. And he's been such a fascinating player this season. Obviously, the struggles, the epic struggles in spring training, and then he refused to accept a trip to the minors. And then he figured it out. He got comfortable probably in this country as much as in the lineup, and he really had been hitting well. How much does his trip to the DL kind of just – hurt this lineup right now when he's been such an important factor when you didn't necessarily see that coming early in the season?
Yeah, it really does hurt the lineup because Buck had been batting him second, and that splits Adam and Manny with a righty-lefty-righty. But the other thing is he's a high-energy guy, and the other thing about him is he's very unselfish as a hitter. He uses foul line to foul line, and he's probably as good an opposite field hitter to left field as he is a pull hitter. And I think if you look back to spring training, and we remember it, I think he was 0 for his first 25 in Sarasota. And the biggest problem was in the Korean Baseball League, the pitchers just don't have the velocity that they have in the major leagues. And he was having a heck of a time getting around on the fastball. And if you're a major leaguer and you can't get around on the fastball, they're going to eat you alive because then you're cheating for the fastball and the breaking stuff becomes so effective. And then you swing and a miss because you're expecting it to do one thing and it's something else. But you got to give the guy credit. I mean, he did work at it. In April, he hardly played at all, but he was a good observer from the bench, watching the team, batting practice, working on it. I think Scott Coolball, the hitting coach, deserves a lot of credit because he kept it positive with Kim, tried to do some things with his swing to shorten the swing so he wouldn't have to cheat so much on the fastball, and now he seems to be fine. I mean, this game is all about timing. In Sarasota in March, his timing was off. It was horrible. But now he has his timing. And the other thing about him, what is really impressive, is that he has a good capacity and a knack for making contact consistently. So he's not a strikeout guy. So if the leadoff man, in this case Adam Jones, who's been leading off since that series in May in Cleveland, if he gets on base, you got a guy coming up next in Kim that's going to put the ball in play in all likelihood. So he's a bigger loss than I think any of us realize. But it was a wise move to put him on the DL. They gave it up until yesterday, and the hamstring he's not too far off, and with the days off for the All-Star break, that'll shorten the time on the DL games-wise. But they were playing a man short, and with Wieters not able to play last night and likely tonight, I haven't seen the lineup yet because he was hit by the pitch in the foot. The other night, they had a two-man bench, and it's very hard at this level to compete late in close games when you have a two-man bench, and that's why the move had to be made. So hopefully he'll be back when the DL period is up because amazingly here in July, he has become a very important hitter to the lineup because he's such a different hitter from the rest of the guys that that go to bat every day for the O's.
And Julio Borbón is the guy that gets called up from Double A, and that's a familiar name, I think, for people throughout baseball, a guy who's spent a lot of time in the big league. So he'll fill that roster spot. All right, well, the deadline, as we've said, less than 2 weeks away, and the obvious need is starting pitching, and unfortunately for the Orioles, it's not something that's abundantly available out there as far as the trade deadline goes. There are guys there. I know the Orioles also don't want to give up too much from an already thin minor league system to get somebody. So if you had to kind of handicap things right now, Jim, and decide which kind of pitcher this Orioles team could end up adding between now and August 1st, what kind of a guy do you expect them to get?
You know, I honestly have no idea. And I say that because you mentioned it. It's what the teams are asking for. And obviously there are players in the system. We may not have an abundance of talent in the minor leagues, but there are some players that are very, very attractive to other teams. And, you know, they may be 19 and 20 years old at Delmarva in low A ball, but there are several pitchers on that team that are very attractive to teams that are building for the future. So the question is it a trade where you're going for the higher end starter? And you're correct. There doesn't appear to be many of those available. So do you sacrifice the top young talent for the future? Or do you go for somebody where maybe a team is looking to shed a salary, where if you're willing to pay the money, you don't have to give up as big of a prospect or as many prospects and then go from there? Now, that scenario might play in their favor because they'll take on salary in this organization. If they can win, they'll do it. Now, I don't know who that pitcher is. I know Irvin Santana's name keeps floating up in every trade rumor associated with the Orioles, and he pitched really well again today. So that might be a name that you see tied to the Orioles. The question is, the Twins now without a GM, what do they ask the Orioles for? And if the Orioles are willing to eat the salary, does a lesser prospect have to go back to Minnesota just to take that salary off their books? Dan Duquette has always been a guy, in charge of a team that if you have a chance to win, he's going to go out and make a move to make this team better. Their attitude is the future is now. It's all about the major league team. You worry about the future in the future, but you do what you have to do to help this team. And that doesn't mean they're going to make a silly trade and just give away the farm. But if they have a chance to get somebody they know is an upgrade and they know can help, because this team has a chance to go to the World Series, and they'd be doing themselves an injustice. And I know they won't go this route if they don't do something. But again, the question is, Tim, what's there, what's available for the asking price? And you have to ask yourself, okay, is this guy really an upgrade for the three prospects they're asking for? And I think that's what it's going to come down to. But with so few starting pitchers available and so many teams needing starting pitching, it's going to be a premium, and the teams are definitely in charge that have the talent. I mean, without a doubt, it's a seller's market.
Yeah, it doesn't help the Orioles at all that one of the teams that has some of the more attractive starting options that could be available is in their own division in the Rays when you think about Matt Moore and Odorizzi, and you would think Tampa Bay is not going to want to deal within the division more than likely. One other guy that maybe can help the starting rotation here down the stretch is we saw Dylan Bundy finally get that major league start, Jim, and he had been real good in the bullpen. Obviously, the former top pick, former number one prospect, all the potential before all the injuries. The first start went okay. It was short. Does he get a few more of those? Can he help them in the rotation? Or do you see Bundy continuing to be more of a bullpen guy the rest of the way?
Well, no, right now he's in the rotation. And the start in Tampa on Sunday, it was short by design because he's not stretched out because he's been in the bullpen all year. It was shorter than they had hoped, no doubt about it. But he showed good velocity. He hit 97, 98 a couple of times. And the thing about being a starter as opposed to the role he was in the bullpen, they actually had him on a schedule where he was working as if he was a starter with the rest off in between his appearances. So he would have 3-4 days off before he would go back into a game. So as far as that, he's on that schedule. The dilemma is his starts are all going to have to be piggyback starts because he's not that stretched out. I think they were looking at 60 pitches for the first start. They're hoping maybe 70 for his next start. I believe he goes Friday at home against Cleveland. But he's the real deal. And the question is the stamina and how deep he can get into games. If he keeps the pitch count low, you know, the other day he had a real good first inning, I think it was, and boom, 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 three up, three down. If he has a few of those, he might be able to get through six innings. And if he gets through six innings on this team with a lead, the bullpen will take care of the rest. So he's definitely in there, at least for now. But again, it's got to be a piggyback start because of the pitch count issue with him. They're not going to risk him getting injured because he's too valuable for next year. The question is that other spot in the rotation, which right now Vance Worley, is holding, and he started last night and actually pitched pretty well. He got a little bit unlucky, gave up three runs, two outs, nobody on. Gregorius had a 10 pitch at bat, finally drew a walk. And then he made a bad pitch to Castro, and it was a two-run home run. So Worley was very valuable in the bullpen as a long man and a guy that would bridge the gap between maybe a shorter start and the bullpen. So Bundy's definitely part of the future, and for him the future is now. But again, all of his starts going forward, unless he's just so on one day where his pitch count is amazingly low, he's going to have a piggyback start. So that's where the upgrade part of this is necessary, to go in with Gausman, who pitched very well against the Yankees the other night, and Tillman is having one of his best years. So pitching, more pitching, Tim. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, nobody can have enough, right? All right, great stuff, Jim. We really appreciate you pinch hitting this week. That's going to do it for this edition of MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Jim Hunter, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.